Mitchell, South Dakota. Taylor Grusing, the cow-calf field specialist down in the Mitchell Regional Office. Good morning, Taylor.
Good morning, Chuck.
Well, how are things down in Mitchell? Are you getting sunshine or it's kind of cloudy yet?
No, the sun is shining, which is a great sight to see for the first time in a while. So I think it's supposed to get up to 50 today.
Wow, send some of that up here.
I'll just keep it for a couple days.
I just came from down south, and it was nice down there. Well, froze coming back last night, but it was only 34. So before I get in, I want to talk about the feeding at night. But before we get there, let's talk about the webinar. You guys are having a webinar. It started, in matter of fact, last Wednesday?
Yes, our heifer development webinar is currently going on. And it started last Thursday, the 15th, and will continue for this up to coming Thursday, so the 22nd and the 29th. People can still register for that. Our first session covered ration programs, and our next two will cover some disease risk management opportunities, such as biosecurity, things to think about. And then the last one will focus on pregnancy rates of heifer development programs.
Now, even if they sign up now and they miss the first one, they will be able to get that on video, audio?
Yes. Yep. So we have registration available on igrow.org, and all of our sessions are recorded. And so it will record the presentation. So if you can't join us live at noon on the 22nd and 29th, you'll receive a link to that recording, and then you can watch that at your leisure as many times as you would like.
So that's still open, and they can run that through and just get a hold of you for that?
Yep. If you go to igrow.org on the events tab, find the Heifer Development Webinar Series registration. It's $15 for all three sessions, and so you just purchase one registration, and you'll get emailed the link to join the webinar series, and that'll be open until March 29th. So still have a week or two to register and get the recordings. If you want to watch them later in April, we know everyone's busy, so might not be the best time right now, but as long as you get registered before the 29th, you can have access to that webinar series.
Well, let's move on to one. I was reading an article, feed at night during and calve during the day. That's something that people would sure like to see. Let's talk a little about that. Does it influence the time of calving?
Right. So there was some research done a long time ago by a beef producer up in Canada, and he noticed that when he started feeding his cattle at night towards 7 p.m. or 10 p.m., that a majority of his cattle started calving then during the daylight hours. And so this research has been replicated both at Iowa State University and Miles City, Montana, and gave the same results, that if we can try to feed our beef cattle after about 4 p.m. at night, or even as late as 10 p.m. if you want to feed that late, we can get those cows to come to the bunk and eat, which would then cause their, you know, rumen digestion to start going through the night, which A, keeps them warm, and B, would then hopefully have them eating at night and then calving during the daytime.
Now, they were talking about feeding once a day or feeding twice a day?
So the original research was twice a day, but some of this, the new data has been once a day. So if you feed just once a day at night, so after 5 p.m., get those cows to come to the bunk, those 80 or 75% of those cows were then more likely to calve between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. So, you know, it's still going to have potentially some cows calving at 6 in the morning, not going to completely alleviate the need to check cows in the middle of the night, but hopefully there will be less activity going on in the middle of the night by using this later feeding method. So that way, if more cows are calving at 6 a.m., you're getting ready to go out of the house at 7, you know, they're only going to be outside for an hour versus maybe 3 or 4 hours if they calved during the night and you missed them.
But you're still not going to get them all to do that, so you're still going to have to probably go out and check that, aren't you?
Right. So we're not going to get 100% of them to calve during the day. You know, if a cow is going into labor At night, she's less likely to come up to the bunk and eat, so that's not going to work for that. You know, if a storm is rolling through and they don't come to the bunk and eat either, you know, that can play a role with having the feed affect the calving time. And so it's still a good idea to at least check once a night, usually right before you go to bed. And then if you do have a large number of cattle calving, and checking at least once in the middle of the night will hopefully aid your success of getting those calves warm, or make sure they get that colostrum within the first few hours.
Now, has there been much more research done on that? Have we done that in our area, and does weather cause an effect on that as well?
So the closest research to us would be in Ames, Iowa, so a little south, but still kind of in the upper Midwest. And they fed at about 4:30 at night and showed that it worked fairly well. We know that it's a little bit colder to the north. Sun, you know, sets a little bit sooner before daylight savings time. So that can play a role by location. But the main idea is just to feed, you know, after 4 or 5 p.m. To get your cows busy eating during that time frame and ruminating over the night. To hopefully, you know, try to get more of those calves born during the day. I do know quite a few producers who do implement this. One of the keys to it is you want to try to start this type of feeding program about a month before they're due to calve. That way they kind of get into the system of when the feed will be delivered, have that program. Just like creatures of habit like we are, we like to eat at the same time every day. So trying to set up this feeding program a month before calving is ideal, but if they are moving them home and starting to feed them a different ration, you know, maybe only a week before, it's still you can still implement it and hopefully reap some of the benefits.
You know, that's interesting, and I guess maybe we'll see some guys do it. Have you talked to some producers who have tried this, Taylor?
Yes. Yep. So I actually grew up with a couple families as well as my own doing this, you know, and it does help a little bit. You know, there's still going to be about 15% that potentially calve in the middle of the night, but we have seen it work pretty well for us.
Well, while we're talking on calving yet, let's talk a little about, you know, as calves get out, there's some cold, some don't get to suck right away. What happens if, say, a cow dies or something and you have a calf out there? You need some colostrum. What do you do? Is there some other colostrum you can give them?
Right, yep. So there is a couple different colostrum replacers that you can utilize. So you can purchase these at a store. There is colostrum replacements as well as colostrum supplements. If the calf did not get any colostrum within the first 24 hours, you're going to want to use one of those replacements that's going to have more of the immunoglobulins in there. If they did get maybe a little bit from the cow but not enough, a supplement. And the difference in those two products will be price. The supplements are going to be a little cheaper. If you do have any kind of cow that maybe lost a calf and she still has colostrum, you could potentially milk her out and freeze that. Want to make sure, you know, that there was a disease-free cow. You could also get some from local dairies from the colostrum, too. But you always want to kind of make sure that you have a good understanding of the herd health, no matter if it's a beef or dairy herd, before going to utilize those. But that can be frozen and then thawed slowly, warmed up, and able to be used on some of those orphan calves.
How much does a calf need when you warm some of that up?
We want to do about 2 to 4 liters within the first 12 hours, so about a gallon is what is ideal. But if you can at least get two liters in there, that's going to be better than nothing. So just not a ton. You know, some of those replacements you can buy them in a pack, and so just mix up the whole pack. And give the calf that whole amount.
But it's one thing that you should have some products in there anyway, just in case that does happen.
Correct. Yep. It's always good to have a couple spare packs on the shelf. So when you are tending to a cow and calf in the middle of the night, it's simple to warm up some water and mix that in, because we know that if they don't get that first milk or colostrum within the first 12 to 24 hours of life, it does kind of affect their life, their production or health, kind of the rest of their life. So the sooner we can get them off to a good start, get them that passive immunity transferred into get their immune system going, the better off they'll be growing throughout the summer. And then when we get to weaning time, hopefully have less sickness in the feedlot also.
One last thing, Taylor, we're getting to the, where we had bull sales and we still got more coming up. Guys are looking for their bulls. What do we need to be concerned with as we start looking at a new sire? What are some of the things you want to look for, or we should be looking for when you're looking at a certain herd?
So every time we usually go sire shopping every year, it seems like you need to make sure you kind of know what you need that sire to do. So if your goal on your operation is to raise feeder cattle, then you need to look through a sire catalog and find a bull that's going to potentially help improve growth of those calves, be it feed efficient, or as well as produce a lot of muscle or heavy muscle with a large ribeye or something like that. So those are traits that we can look at in the sire catalogs, which are notified in EPDs, so expected progeny differences, which is data that's collected from both the sire and the dam of that bull to kind of give a projection of what we expect them to perform on their offspring also. So those are some things you want to look at for that. So keep in mind your herd goal, as well as you want to try to go look at those bulls in person too. So to make sure that they're the right size, that they're structurally sound so that they can get around the pasture and service those cows that you need them to do.
And of course, do you look at increasing the weaning weights and plus and negatives of milk and so on?
Yes, yep. So one other items you can look at is weaning weights. In the beef industry, we sell mostly pounds, whether that's at weaning or at finishing. And so if we can have a plus weaning weights compared to another bull, that might be good for you to improve your weaning weights from year to year. Milk numbers, usually we want to try to keep kind of moderate because that is directly correlated to feed costs. So going into this summer, if we have a shortage of rain again, our pastures may not grow as well as we'd like them to. So if we can kind of moderate our milk numbers, but hopefully still have a good weaning weight number, then hopefully our calves will still perform well the next year.
What have you been hearing about calving ease out there as far as the cows that are calving now? Are we seeing the cows in pretty good shape because of a lot of exercise, or are we seeing larger calves?
So word on the street this year has been we've seen some larger calves than maybe a little bit normal. We did have a pretty mild fall until, early December. And then we started, when it did get really cold, we were able to feed those cows extra nutrients. And we did have a lot of ice. So that might have played a role into maybe not getting quite as much exercise as normal. And then storing those feed resources and directly partitioning those to the calves. There hasn't been for the cows, I think they're still having them fine. Heifers maybe need a little bit more assistance. We do select calving ease bulls to hopefully help those heifers have those calves unassisted. And utilizing the calving ease direct EPD is the best way we can gauge that for our future sire prospects.
Last question. Do you recommend that they test their bulls that they've had in their herd after the winter, or don't get too concerned with that?
For breeding soundness exams,
right.
You mean?
Right.
Yes, right. So no matter if you're buying a new herd sire or getting your bulls ready that you have at your house for the breeding season, we always want to do a breeding soundness exam prior to turnout, so that we can make sure that the semen quality is adequate to get the cows bred. Some things that can affect some of that quality would be frostbite. With it being really, really cold this winter, if there wasn't adequate bedding for the bulls, there could be some frostbite damage, which will heal over time, but it would take at least 60 days to heal that from the freezing event. So We want to make sure you're doing your breeding soundness exams with your veterinarian at least 30 days prior to turnout to pasture, earlier if possible. That way, if you do need a replacement bull, there's still some sales going on, and you can potentially purchase one before the breeding season starts.
Well, Taylor, thank you very much for joining me today and bringing us up to date on some of that stuff. It was an interesting thing. They can find most of the stuff on iGrow. But thanks a lot, and good luck this spring.
Thanks.
All right, Taylor. Thanks a lot. And that's Taylor Grusin, who's the cow-calf field specialist at the Mitchell Regional Office.
This is Cody Miller with Miller Angus Farms of Esaline, South Dakota, personally inviting you to our annual bull and female sale. Big change this year. We have moved our sale date up to Monday, March 26th at 1 p.m. Same place at the